Sports Time Radio. All sports, all the time.
It's Halloween here on Sports Time Radio, and I'm the Big Jack. If you'd like to call into the podcast, 646-478-3753 is the number to do that. If not, feel free to email us, sportstimeradio@hotmail.com. Anything else you need, head on over to sportstimeradio.com. Now, you know, the new blog did pop up over there yesterday, so if you hadn't had a chance to check it out yet, swing on over there, take a look at it. Of course, while you're at sportstimeradio.com, go ahead and hit that link, follow it over to the Sports Time Radio Facebook page. I know I've been pretty lax at posting stuff, but hopefully I'll have to make a little better attempt at that. But, hey, you know, while you're over there, go ahead and like that. You know, we would really appreciate it if you did that. But don't forget, we also have the Twitter feed, which is at Sports Time Radio. I am out there on Twitter as well. You can find me at Burketime. That's B-U-R-K-E-T-I-M-E if you're looking for me on Twitter. So there you go. And, yeah, we'll hold off on the baseball a little bit to see if Dan shows up. I haven't heard from him, but I was under the impression he was going to be here. So let's start with a little bit of NFL. Of course, it's Thursday night, so we do have the Thursday night football game. You know, and I've been hearing a lot of negatives here with this. You know, we've got the San Francisco Giants. I believe they're at the Arizona Cardinals, so it's a home game for Arizona. Now, of course, the San Francisco Giants, the 49ers are 7-0, while the Cardinals are 3-4-1. Of course, the 49ers are one of just two unbeaten teams left in the NFL, and everybody seems to think this is going to kind of be an easy win for the Giants here. I got to stop doing that for the 49ers here. Maybe I should just say San Francisco. Huh? That would probably make my life a little easier. And I was trying to see what the point spread. You can actually get the Cardinals in 9.5, on the point spread. So that's a big number. And, you know, these division games. Now, I fully expect the 49ers to win this game. I don't think the Cardinals are going to pull the upset off here. But I just don't see it being the blowout that everybody else does. And yeah, you know, I mean, again, maybe I'm wrong here. I mean, you know, I could be a complete idiot when it comes to this kind of stuff. But yeah, I'm just... you know, division game, I think the Cardinals are a little better than people think. You know, they are going to be hurt by the fact that I believe David Johnson and Chase Edmonds are both going to be inactive. I'm trying to see if the inactives have been released yet, but I don't think they have been. So, you know, that could hurt. I mean, they did acquire Kenyon Drake. I don't know if, you know, he'll be fully up to speed on what is going on with the team. But, you know, it's possible that, you know, he could be, you know, he could, he'll, you know, he'll get some carries, of course. I just don't know if he's going to be ready to be that 20 carry guy if they need somebody like that. So, we'll have to kind of see how that goes. And I don't know when they have to announce the inactive by. So that will be, the other question here. I always kind of forget when the time deadlines are and stuff like that for this. So we'll have to see. But yeah, you know, that'll obviously hurt their running game. But yeah, other than that, you know, it should be okay. You know, the 49ers do have a fantastic defense, but you know, quarterbacks like Kyler Murray can can kind of challenge these kind of defenses. Like I saw the betting line, I was surprised the over under for his rushing yards was just 25.5. And I thought that was really low for a game like tonight, because you've got to figure, you kind of combine the 49ers pass rush with Kyler Murray's, escapability. And I'm sure they'll get to him a couple times tonight. I mean, Nick Bosa and those guys up front have been, fantastic. But I don't think they're going to get to him every time, which means he's going to have some opportunity to get out and run a little bit. And you got to wonder if maybe they'll design a running play or two for him where it's possible. I mean, just to throw that defense off a little bit, maybe set something up where he can get on the edge and go, because, he'll have the speed to get away from these linemen, which, a lot of quarterbacks don't have. So, if I had to pick, and I think I did pick the 49ers to win the game, I just don't think they're going to cover, I guess is the way to look at it. Division games are always normally close and tough, and, especially for a situation like this. I mean, like the Cardinals, like I said, are better than we expected. So, I'm not expecting them to win anything like that. I'm not going to go out here and throw out a big upset and tell you to go gamble all your money on that. But I do believe that they have the opportunity to stay within, the 9.5 and all that other kind of stuff that, goes with gambling and that. But, we'll see how it goes. But, you do wonder after this, the 49ers get by this. Well, do they have a loss coming up? How long do they kind of stretch this out? After this game, they're home the next 2 weeks. They're home against Seattle. That's the Monday night game, so they're going from Thursday to Monday. And then they are home against the Cardinals again, so it's one of those weird, hey, we play you, we get a week off, then we play you again. Then they're home. They're hosting the Packers. I think that's a good deal for them that they're home against the Packers. And then they're going to go on the road for a couple tough games. They're going to go on the road against the Ravens and then on the road against the Saints. And then their season wraps up. They got the Falcons at home, the Rams at home, and then they finish the season on the road in Seattle, which is always a tough place to play no matter how the Seahawks are doing. So, it could be interesting. I mean, you got to think they get by the Cardinals tonight. They probably get by the Seahawks at home and then the Cardinals at home. That Packer game could be interesting. But, if they lose to the Packers, there's a good chance they end up losing to the Ravens and the Saints, and they end up on like a little three-game skid. They should bounce back against the Falcons, and then they'll close out with tougher games being, against the Rams and against the Seahawks. Seattle is 6-2. I think people seem to forget that because they're only beating teams by, a few points. All their games are really close. The Rams are actually 5-3 and kind of in a bind to, get a win here, because it's going to be really competitive for these wild card spots in the NFC, it looks like. And, you're going to want to be at your best record to get there. So, we'll have to see how it kind of shakes out. Let's see what we got here as we're looking at this. We got the Vikings at 6-2. Oh, maybe not. Maybe it's not so bad. We got the Vikings at 6-2, the Seahawks at 6-2, and then the Rams at 5-3 are the real big contenders. You can probably throw the Eagles in at 4-4 and then the Panthers in at 4-3. But, that's kind of a stretch there. We'll have to see how that kind of plays out. But yeah, I mean, this could be a big win for Arizona, who, like I said, is 3-4-1. you know, you get back to 500, maybe, you know, you get on a little roll, you start believing in yourself. I guess it's possible for them to, you know, get off here. You know, they will, you know, after tonight, they're going on the road for a couple games. They're in Tampa Bay, and then, of course, they come back for that matchup with the 49ers again. Then they're home against the Rams, the Steelers, and the Browns before they finish the season on the road at Seattle and then at the Rams. So it's, you know, I mean, they have, what, one, two, three, four, you know, maybe four winnable games on that schedule. You know, if they pull an upset off and they end up at, you know, 8-7-1, you know, I guess there's an outside chance they could compete for that second wild card. So, you know, it definitely is, you know, something they could look at. Or, you know, again, like I said, you know, much better than, you know, what things look like. And I finally found an injury update. I was bouncing around here looking for an injury update. And David Johnson's injury is an ankle, and it said that he is not expected to play tonight. This is being reported by Adam Schefter of the Mickey Mouse Network. So, you know, that's kind of how that's looking. So, like I said, you know, hey, you know, maybe it'll be, you know, I know the 49ers defense is tough, but maybe it'll be a good night for Kenyon Drake, who I believe I dropped in a couple leagues because he just wasn't getting any carries with Miami. That and the team was bad. So, you know, we'll see. But, you know, they do have a healthy Christian Kirk. He played really well last week. You know, they have Larry Fitzgerald. I know Charles Clay finally put up some numbers last week. You know, people may forget Clay used to be a really solid tight end. And, you know, he signed that free agent deal with Buffalo, and it just kind of crashed and burned there. And I believe last year he was injured for most of the season. But, you know, like I said, I mean, he's been a, was he a 49er? You know, and this, it's one of those things that, you know, I just kind of do this in my head and try to remember who the heck plays for who, and you would think I wouldn't just throw it out here at you guys. But of course now I have to look it up. But he was actually drafted in 2011. So he's hung around the league for a little while. No, it's actually just Miami. He spent 4 years in Miami and 4 years in Buffalo, and now he's on to Arizona. But yeah, you know, as you know, when he got the job in Miami, you know, he had 69 catches 1 year to go with six TDs. He does have 11 receptions through eight games so far this year, so he's getting a couple a game. But you know, I mean, he's got a really good average for a tight end. He's averaging 14.4 yards a catch, which is fantastic for a tight end. So, you know, I mean, well, you know, again, I'm not saying, you know, the Cardinals are going to win this game. Don't get me wrong there. I mean, the 49ers are fantastic. You know, they have one of, if not the best rushing attacks in the NFL, you know, and it's kind of a three-headed monster with, you know, Tevin Coleman, Matt Breida, and then Rashard Mosberth, if he's playing. I know they had some injuries as well. So, you know, it's gonna be tough to stop. I mean, it's really going to put the Cardinals' defense to the test, and we'll see. You know, just kind of how they are. Let's see, do I have rushing leaders here? Who is it? Yeah, actually, they're second. The Ravens have the best rushing offense in the NFL. At 204.1 yards per game, while the Niners are 181.1. So they're not the best, but the second best. And then do we have who are the best rushing defenses? The 49ers actually have the best rushing defense. They're allowing 224 yards per game. That's 10 yards better than anybody else. Let me find out where the Cardinals rank, and maybe we can see if having Tevin Coleman in your fantasy lineup, which I do have in one of mine. I wanted him. I was trying to get him on multiple teams this year, and it just didn't work for me. People kept grabbing him before I could get to him. Oh, yeah, come on. Where are you? Where are you, Arizona? Hello. Oh, well, that wasn't very nice. Let's see. Ooh, Arizona is at the way at the bottom here. So, yeah, if you have a 49er running back, you know, it definitely looks like a good time to get them in. What, there's 32 teams in the NFL, so this would be 32, this would be 31, this would be 30. Arizona is actually 29th in they had the wrong defensive stat there, so we'll see what we got here. All right, average yards per game. Okay, they're a little better on average yards per game. Let's see. They're 25th on average yards per game with 131.1. But wow, it looks like they may have actually given up the most yards rushing. Let me sort this category here and see what we come up with. Oh no, not quite. They're let's see, 28 at 1,041. So yeah, it definitely looks like it's going to be a really good night for the 49ers to run the football. You know, again, we'll just kind of have to see how it goes. And you know, who knows? Again, you know, you got to wonder, maybe Arizona's a little more pumped up because it's a division game. You think, you hope, you see. I want to check the 49ers injuries here and see what we got. It looks like both running backs, Raheem Mozart, he's listed as questionable. Let's see, Thursday's game against Cardinals. They do report that he is in line to play. He has a knee injury, and then Matt Breida has an ankle, but he is also expected to be active. Now, of course, Tevin Coleman is healthy, so that means he should get the majority of the carries. And depending on the extent of these injuries here, will be if or how they they kind of spell these things out. And we'll see. But yeah, again, it looks like, with the matchup and everything, it looks like it could be a really good night to have Tevin Coleman in your fantasy lineup. We'll take it from there. Hopefully you have him. Like I said, I got him on one team. I have four or five teams. And I only managed to land him in one draft because I can't, because I'm not smart enough to pick him sooner. I guess that's just kind of how it worked out. But yeah, that's your Thursday night matchup. So, there you go. Some other news. Joe Flacco is going to be out 4 to 6 weeks, but they're saying he will not need surgery. I'm trying to remember what they diagnosed him with. I know it was a neck. What did he have? Neck injury. That's nice. They said neck. He's got a neck. Here we go. A bulging disc in his neck. So there you go. That's going to be 4 to 6 weeks. As much as you hate to say it, the Broncos really aren't going anywhere, and it'll give them an opportunity to look at Brandon Allen. So we'll see how it goes. I don't know if you want to jump on Brandon Allen in your fantasy league and, see if you can land him there or if you need him. I know like in our league, we have 20 team leagues, so it's always a little more interesting for us. And I actually landed in the situation where I have Jared Goff as a starter. So I didn't panic and I didn't worry about really getting a backup. And when the time came, I ended up with Marcus Mariota. Well, the Rams are off this week, and Mariota's no longer the starter in Tennessee. Now, as you can expect, in a 20-team league, it's a little difficult to find a guy. I'm trying to remember who I attempted to pick somebody up. It wasn't Brandon Allen. It was somebody else. I can't remember who else is starting this week. But yeah, I threw my waiver claim in and it was denied. So, I don't know. you know, what I'm kind of doing. I'm still kind of searching for a guy to see if I could, you know, if I could find somebody. And, you know, what was funny is I thought, well, maybe I would just grab Taysom Hill. You know, I thought, okay, I can just go ahead and, you know, grab a Hill and see if, you know, this would work out for me. But the Saints are on bye as well. So that doesn't help me either. So, yeah, I haven't quite figured out what my real options here. I believe Ryan Fitzpatrick is still out there. So I may actually have to kind of, you know, make the move and grab him. Cause I think, is he starting now for the Dolphins? I don't even know, you know anymore, but you know, that may be my best bet and just hope he, you know, he racked up enough points. And luckily for me, this is on what has turned out to be my good team. So I just got to kind of hope that, you know, things play out my way. But a lot of the reason is it's my good team is I have Jared Goff and Robert Woods on it. So I'm going to need some bigger performances from my other guys. You know, and I do have Saquon Barkley, who was healthy, and Mark Ingram is on this team. So I'm still pretty confident that they'll do okay. And, you know, who knows, right? Fitzpatrick is playing the Jets, so maybe he'll go – you know, maybe he'll go hog wild again. You know, I know that I just saw the Jets put their fifth linebacker on IR. So, you know, maybe that'll help. And, you know, I'll get a cheap point or two there, you know, from that. Maybe, you know, Fitzpatrick will have one of those days where he lights it up and throws multiple TDs. And who are they? Yeah, the Dolphins win a game. Yeah, I know I'm asking for a lot there. Trust me, I understand that. But, you know, sometimes you have to hope and wish for these things. So, you know, then while we're still on football, I had a little bit of an issue with something I saw from, I think it was yesterday. You know, the media is just like killing Baker Mayfield, but this is to be expected because he had a problem with a media member. And obviously when, you know, you have a problem with a media member, they're going to side with the media. But in all honesty, I can understand why he reacted the way he did. Now, obviously, you know, the Browns are struggling, you know, so there's a lot of, I don't know, anger, however you want to look at it, frustration. You know, they were, you know, a big time premium pick to go to the Super Bowl, and you know, they're out of the gate 2-5. So it's difficult to see. I know, you know, everybody's saying they do have an easier second half schedule, but Baker Mayfield's doing his thing. He's sitting in his locker. He's answering questions. And you can tell he's ticked off. It's like, okay, great, this guy's a little aggravated. Let's see where this goes. So they ask him a question, and he gives a really short, kind of smart, you know, sarcastic, smart-ass, however you want to look at it, answer. And the reporter asked him the same question. Yeah. So he answered it again. The guy didn't like it. Asked him the question a third time. And then when Mayfield answered it, the guy said, but, and Mayfield finally cut him off and kind of flipped out on him a little bit, you know, gave the guy some lip, let him have it a little bit and walked out on the, you know, the media session. Okay. Now I totally understand why he did this. But yet, of course, the media is just, I mean, they're just lighting him up. And, you know, he's an idiot, and I can't believe he reacted like that. And, oh, my God, you know, the NFL should suspend him and fine him and throw him out of the league because, you know, God forbid he spoke ill to a media member who, again, asked him the exact same question literally four times in a row. And for whatever reason – you know, and I, you know, all the media people act like that. You know, one of the lines Mayfield used was he said something to the effect of, you never played, so you don't know what it's like. So it's just kind of like, I get it. You don't want to have that kind of reaction, but he's not lying. You know, this guy never played football at a high level, and especially at the NFL level. So he's got absolutely no clue what Mayfield and the team are going through. And then somebody tried to defend him by saying, well, you know, he's been covering the Browns for a long time. Well, in all those years he's been covering the Browns, how many snaps has he taken? Yeah, my guess is going to be zero. Okay? So it's just one of those things. Basically what the guy got was he got his story. You know, just that plain and simple. You know, this was, you know, what he wanted was he needed a story. He got a story. And now, you know, he can, you know, they can write about this for weeks now. Luckily the Browns have lost their last three games. Luckily they're playing Denver, who, you know, like I mentioned, is going to have a backup quarterback in and isn't a very good team when they have their starting quarterback in. So, you know, it should be a win. And, you know, things should get better for Cleveland. You know, they have Buffalo, who does have a tough defense, but if you look at Buffalo's wins, they've came against all bad teams. They haven't beaten a good team yet. Then they have Pittsburgh, who we know is struggling, the Dolphins, Pittsburgh again, the Bengals, who haven't beat anybody, the Cardinals, the Ravens, and then the Bengals. So there's a really good chance that down the stretch here, the Browns could go, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7? You know, they could go 7-2 or 8-1, you know, and really kind of save their season. If they go 8-1, they're probably in the playoffs. I don't know, 7-2 would make them 9-7. That could be a little borderline, but yeah, you know, if they get to that 10th win, you're looking at their schedule, they should be good enough to beat everybody except the Ravens. Now, will they play up to that? We don't know. They've had a tendency to play down to some teams. Just coming right out of the gate, you know, they lost to the Titans. So, they got just destroyed by the Ravens. No, they beat the Ravens. That's right. Their second win was against the Ravens. They blew the Ravens out 40-25. So, you know, it makes you kind of wonder – you know, what we're going to get, but I can kind of understand the frustration. I won't be surprised if we see, you know, Odell Beckham end up off the handle here with this, because, you know, he's not getting the targets that you would think a receiver like Odell Beckham would get, but, you know, you kind of understand that because teams are going to, you know, they're going to crack down on him. And, you know, Mayfield has struggled. He's completing, a little under 58% of his passes, but he's thrown 12 picks. You also have to remember he's been sacked 21 times, so that's not helping anybody. But Beckham has 34 targets. Jarvis Landry has 30. The only other guy in double digits is Nick Chubb with 21. Obviously it didn't help that David Njoku got hurt. He only played two games, and, you know, he was done. So, you know, It's been a tough start, but, you know, if you look at it and you kind of, like I said, you look at the schedule and you look at the team, you know, it really could get a lot better for Cleveland here. And I mean, it could get a lot better as in they find their way into the playoffs. So, don't be shocked here if some of these – some of these predictions, like I don't think they're a Super Bowl team. I mean, they're not going to beat, a New England or, probably a healthy Kansas City. Maybe they could beat Baltimore again. You know, we'd have to see, but, you know, anything like that. But, the AFC is pretty wide open. You know, like I mentioned, Buffalo is 5-2. you think, okay, well, you know, wow, the Bills are, you know, they're right there, and they're, you know, they're in playoff contention. All right, here their five wins are against the Jets, the Giants, the Bengals, the Titans, and the Dolphins. Okay, the Bengals and the Titans, or not the Bengals and the Titans, the Bengals and the Dolphins haven't won a game. The Titans are just a you know, it turned into kind of an unmitigated disaster. The Jets have one win. The Titans do have four wins, believe it or not, but the Giants only have two. So the Bills have beaten one team with a 500 record, and the other teams, the other four wins, they have three wins combined. Yeah. So what do you kind of look into that? I mean, otherwise, you know, the Texans, I assume both the Colts and the Texans are going to get in. One will win the South, the other will be a wild card. You know, then you're looking at the Steelers are 3-4, the Raiders are 3-4, the Chargers are 3-5, and then you got the Jaguars and the Titans at 4-4. You got to figure pretty confident if Cleveland gets to 9 or 10 wins, like they should, with the back end of that schedule, they're going to get a wild card spot. So we'll see how that goes. But all right, well, we're halfway through the podcast, and it looks like I'm on my own here. So I am going to play my long music here and take a little break. I will be back in a couple minutes, and we'll talk some baseball. There we go. Now, obviously, I would have started off with the baseball, since, you know, that was the big story coming in, but I honestly thought Dan was going to be here, so we'll pick it up from here. Obviously, last night, the Washington Nationals win their first World Series title in team history. No Montreal Expos titles. You know, and then the Expos obviously moved to Washington to become the Nationals. There were two other teams in Washington. There used to be two teams called the Senators. One is defunct and one is now the Texas Rangers. And I don't believe either of those teams ever won a world championship. So, yeah, there you go. The Nationals just killed it. And, a lot of questions from last night, centering around the movement the Astros made. And, I had some myself. I'm in the group that believes the hook on Zach Greinke was a little too quick. And I know that's the way baseball's played now. Even though the Nationals did win with starting pitching, Greinke was, he was good. Officially he goes 6 1/3, 2 hits, 2 runs, both earned, 2 walks, 3 strikeouts. He's not blowing guys away anymore. I mean, you're looking at a guy who really tops out at 91, 92, but he's very smart. He knows how to use the strike zone. He hits his corners, kind of stretches the plate out a little bit. And, I'm just not sure if they shouldn't have given him a spot. He was only at 80 pitches. He'd only given up 2 hits. We get into the – let's get into the seventh inning here. Where are we? 6, doo-doo-doo. Top of the seventh. Where's the top of the seventh? Here it is. All right. We start out the inning. He gets eaten the ground out to shortstop. And then he gives up the home run to Rendon to make it 2-1. Okay. Not terrible. And then he walks Juan Soto, but if you really break down and you look at that at bat, he was really close on 3 pitches that were called balls that could have went, the other way. And if they do, we're looking at a whole other game here. He started him out. He threw that little four seamer that just missed on the outside corner. Then he came back with a slow curveball in the exact same spot, pretty much, that was called a strike. Then he really missed with a changeup. He was trying to go back out for that corner and he missed with a changeup. Then he missed low on a ball that was, again, could have went either way. And then he walked him on a curveball going back out for that outside corner that he just missed on. So it's not like he was wild and pitches were flying all over the place. And, clearly he made a mistake to Rendon. He got that – he hung that changeup right down the middle of the plate and Rendon made him pay for it. But the at-bat against Soto wasn't terrible. So, I don't know. It was almost kind of a panic move. I kind of felt it was on A.J. Hinch's part, and then he gets Will Harris, who'd been really good, but Hinch himself had mentioned, when we had an off day that Will Harris was the guy who deserved the off day more than anybody else. So he went to him. Okay. He made a decent pitch, but Kendrick is a veteran hitter. The cutter was a little out and away, and what do veteran hitters do? They take it to right field and you hit it over the right field wall. So now all of a sudden it's 3-2 Astros. The momentum is dead. He had Garrett Cole up a little earlier. What I would have liked to seen him do is allow Greinke to pitch to the right-handed Kendrick. Let the veteran face the veteran. And, see how it kind of goes there. Maybe if he puts the second guy on, then you go to Harris or you go to one of your other guys to face Cabrera, who did end up singling off of Harris. So, you know, if you could have avoided the home run, maybe the game would have been just tied. Instead, he had to turn to his closer to get out of the inning. You know, Ozuna had to come in and, you know, he even walked the guy before, you know, he managed to get the last couple outs. I'm thinking if you'd have stayed with Greinke to face Kendrick, you know, and then if you would have had to make the switch, okay, you know, maybe you go to something. But if it's, you know, if it's a 2-2 game instead of a 3-2 game, when the Nationals come out for the top of the eighth inning, they're facing Gerrit Cole, you know, instead of Ozuna. So, yeah, you know, might be a little different story. And, you know, here obviously is where the game starts to get away. Ozuna gets the first out in the eighth, but then he walks Eaton, who manages to steal second. Rendon flies out, so it's looking like he might get out of it, but Soto beats him with a single to right field, and Eaton scores. So, you're looking at a 4-2 game now. Patrick Corbin he pitched fantastic, and he just shut the Astros offense down. You know, we get into the ninth, and for some reason they go to Joe Smith, and I know his numbers looked good, but boy, I don't know if I'm going to Joe Smith. That's a tough call. You know, he starts off, he gives up the single to Zimmerman. He gets the fielder's choice for the first out. Then Robles singles and Turner walks. So now we've got the bases loaded for Adam Eaton. You know, they make the switch. They go to Urucuti or Urucati or however they pronounce it, which I know I just botched. And Eaton greets him with a single. So now it's 6-2, and barring a miraculous, you know, comeback, it's over. You know, but on the plus side, the Astros do have the top of the order. So you're thinking, okay, maybe. Springer didn't look great popping up to second base for the first out. Altuve looked terrible. Probably the worst at bat I had seen Altuve had in a long time. He took two really good fastball strikes, and then he just looked terrible swinging at the third one, you know, against Daniel Hudson for the second out of the inning. And then, you know, Brantley had a good at bat, you know, with two outs, but he ended up striking out in the end, and, you know, that's it. That's all. Goodbye. Nationals are the World Series champions. But, I mean, just gigantic statistical anomalies in this game. You know, you look at it, the Nationals won five different elimination games through the postseason. Think about how hard that is to do. Five times your back is up against the wall and you're going home if you don't win, and your team is clutch enough to do it. Now, maybe it had to do with the fact that they are the oldest team in baseball, so they had that experience on their side. Even though, you know, Juan Soto is one of the youngest players in the league, you know, the rest of the team is up there. So, you know, maybe that helped. Obviously, the biggest statistical anomaly that just sticks out is the fact that no home team figured out how to win a game. How is that even possible that a home team can't find a way to win one game in a playoff series? I mean, they talk about it all year. You know, well, you know, this is over or that's over, but they're playing for home field advantage. So, you know, don't forget that. So, yeah, you know, then, I mean, you throw in the fact that the Nationals were 19-31 at the end of, I think it was May. Was it May they were 19-31? You know, I remember that it was June or whatever, they had as many losses as the Detroit Tigers, who went on to lose, I believe, the most games in baseball this year. And they're hoisting the World Series trophy. I mean, it's odd when, you know, you talk about it and you look at it. And, I mean, you have to mention it, even though it's really not a factor. You know, their big off-season move was signing Patrick Corbin. But to do that, they more or less had to let Bryce Harper go. And now again, what they won with here, and I know every single analytic guy hates this, they won by allowing their starting pitchers to go deep into games. You know, now I know Scherzer only went five last night, but they backed that up with Corbin, who went three. So, you know, basically they got eight innings out of a starting pitcher. You know, it just took two of them. And, it's just one of those things that, you know, this is something you're not supposed to be doing in today's game. You're not supposed to leave your starting pitcher out there for seven, eight innings. But the Nationals did it. You know, to an extent, the Astros did it as well. So, you know, you've got to kind of wonder here now, you know, maybe you can kick the analytic guys to the curb for some of this stuff. And I know they won't, because there's just too many of them and the media loves it because the media is most of the guys. But, yeah, I mean, you know, you start looking, you know, through the postseason, all right? Strasburg pitched in six games, 36 and a third innings. Now, remember, one of those appearances was a relief appearance. Scherzer also six games. He appeared in relief once, 30 innings. All right, Corbin made eight appearances, 23 and a third. Annabelle Sanchez made three starts, went 18 innings. All right, Joe Ross made one start. Now, this is Joe Ross, just one start. He pitched in two games, went seven innings. So, you know, yeah, I mean, you look at that. I mean, Strasburg, Scherzer, and Corbin went, what, 30, 60, 89, almost 90 innings in the postseason. Yeah. All right, you're not supposed to do stuff like that. You know, when it comes to the analytical side of the game, that's a big no-no. You know, they tell you, you know, your pitchers aren't supposed to face the lineup a third time through. You know, I mean, you look at the World Series innings. Strasburg made two starts, pitched 14 and a third innings, and by the way, he was the MVP. Corbin and Scherzer each went 10 innings. Scherzer did it in his two starts. Corbin made one start and two appearances out of the bullpen. You know, again, then it's back to Joe Ross, who only pitched in the World Series, went seven. And Annabelle Sanchez posted five and a third in his start. But, you know, that's kind of what you expect out of those two guys. So just really, I mean, really carried through the postseason by Strasburg, Corbin, and Scherzer. You know, unbelievable. I know Sanchez had that one fantastic start against St. Louis, and you need those kind of things if you're going to go on this kind of run. But, yeah, you know, it just, you know, unbelievable. And I know Hudson closed out the game last night, but, you know, Sean Doolittle was fantastic. Three appearances, three innings, didn't give up any runs and did pick up a save. So, you know, just, you know, he was back to kind of looking more like a closer. Hudson did get knocked around a little bit, gave up four runs in this series, but not last night. He was on. So, you know, it just kind of, you know, it played out the Nationals' way or however you want to look at it. And, you know, all that matters is they're holding the trophy and everybody else is looking at them holding the trophy. You know, they they, you know, they played the best. So, and I did enjoy the fact that, you know, Joe Buck waited until like the eighth or ninth inning to mention that Garrett Cole could have thrown his last pitch for the Astros, because that's what we're going to get into now. Obviously, teams have already made a ton of decisions here on, you know, guys, nothing major yet. I think the biggest names so far, or the two biggest names, the Yankees have declined their option on Edwin Encarnacion, and the Marlins have declined their option on Starlin Castro, so they'll both be free agents. Joining them, it's just come out that Aaron Loop of the Padres is going to be a free agent, I believe, and Robbie Erlin. I believe they're both left-handed pitchers. Wellington Castillo was actually traded from the White Sox to the Rangers for a minor leaguer today. But the Rangers are kind of saying they're not going to pick up his option for next year. So he'll end up back out on the free agent market. The A's picked up the option on Yusmeiro Petit, but they declined it on Jake Diekman. So, you know, Diekman will be out there. We had another deal via Angels, picked up right-hander Parker Markel from the Pirates just for cash, just a minor leaguer. The Reds did acquire Travis Jankowski from the Padres for international bonus money, is all the Padres are getting in return. The Mariners declined their option on Wade LeBlanc, so he'll hit the free agent market. More Rangers stuff here. It looks like the Rangers are also going to decline the option on Nate Jones and Sean Kelly, a couple of right-handed relievers. So, yeah, it's just, a lot of guys kind of, a lot of these kind of guys, the bullpen pieces, the veteran, the veteran money guys like this, we're going to see a lot of these guys in the next few days either have their options picked up or just be let go out onto the free agent market. So it will add to the pool there. And, we'll see how that kind of builds up. But, these are the kind of guys, you need these guys. Wellington Castillo was a solid player for the White Sox. He did have the suspension. But he was a solid behind the plate guy. And I understand, James McCann had a fantastic year, and they have a prospect by the name, I believe it's Zach Collins, that they're going to look to start getting regular at bats for. So there just really wasn't a spot for Castillo. Not surprised the Yankees declined the option on Encarnacion. He was, pretty injury prone for them when they got them. But, you were looking, their choice was guarantee him $20 million or buy him out for $5 million. If they really want him back, they could probably get him back for less than $20 million. But, you look like last year, he only played 44 games. Like I said, he was just banged up. He hit .249 with 13 homers, so he provided them with a little power. For the year, he hit 34. Remember, he hit 21 before he came over. So, all in all, he had an Encarnacion type of year. He was .244 with 34 bombs and 86 RBIs. But, that's not $20 million worth of player, I think, in today's day and age. So it's no surprise that they kind of decided to part ways there. I'm sure, he may be one of those guys who hangs out on the market for a while. And, we kind of wait and see what's going on. But, now speaking of waiting or since seeing, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be waiting and seeing on what these big guys do. I've already mentioned Gerrit Cole, who is just flat out a free agent. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But there are some guys, we've got to see, I'm guessing the Pirates are going to buy Chris Archer out. It's $9 million or a $1.75 buyout. So, Jake Arrieta has an opt-out clause. I kind of got the feeling he's not going to take that. Yu Darvish has an opt-out. I'm under the impression he won't take that either. Jose Quintana's due $11.5 million next year. The Cubs can buy him out for $1 million. So, you got to wonder what goes on there. The Braves are going to have to make a decision on Julio Teheran. He's been there a long time. He's got $12 million in an option or $1 million buyout. And then Jason Vargas, who I believe ended up with the Phillies, they're going to pay him $8 million or they're going to buy him out for $2 million. And then, of course, the big one coming off of the World Series, the MVP, Steven Strasburg, has the option to opt out of the final 4 years of his contract. Now, he's due $100 million, $25 million a year. He'll be turning 31. If he opts out, can he get 6 years? Can he get 7 years? And is a team going to go $30 million after this performance we saw? He had the best year of his career. He finally looked like, I think, the Steven Strasburg a lot of us thought we were going to get. Will he go? you know, he is a Scott Boras guy, but I remember last time when they had the contract discussion, Strasburg wanted to stay, and he basically kind of forced Boras to make a deal with the Nationals. Coming off a World Series title, will he, you know, will he do the same, or would he be inclined to maybe opt out and try to get a little more out of the Nationals? So, you know, that's going to be one of the biggest things right there. We do have a couple of relievers also. Kenley Jansen has already announced that he's not going to opt out. He's got 2 years and $38 million left with the Dodgers, so he's not going anywhere. But interestingly, and I'm kind of under the impression he's not going to opt out, but Aroldis Chapman can opt out. He's got 2 years left on a deal at $30 million. The money is probably a little low for a closer of his status, but he seems to like being a Yankee. And you got to wonder, I mean, with that bullpen the way it is, if he was to opt out, there's a possibility they would just let him go. You know, and just kind of be like, well, okay, good luck. You know, try your luck on the free agent market, because they'll have, you know, Zach Britton, Adam Ottavino, Tommy Kaneling, you know, Sean Green. They'll have a core of bullpen guys coming back. I know Dellin Betances is a free agent. So I don't know if they would up the ante there for Aroldis if he would decide that he wants to try his luck on the free agent market. But, you know, there are, like I said, there are some really interesting pitching names that could end up out there. I just don't know if we'll see them. You know, and I know humorously, I keep hearing everybody talking about Yasmani Grandal being a free agent, but according to this here, the Brewers actually have a $16 million mutual option on him. You know, so, or he, you know, there's a $2.25 million buyout. You know, after the year he had, you got to think Milwaukee's got to take a serious look at bringing him back. You know, because you look at it here, like Eric Thames has an option for him, but they can cut him loose for $1 million. You know, he's got a $7.5 million option or $1 million buyout. It will be interesting to see how the Nationals handle Ryan Zimmerman. He's got an $18 million option and a $2 million buyout. You know, he's been a longtime National, but there's a lot of injuries on that, and $18 million is a lot of money to pay Ryan Zimmerman. Same thing in Cleveland. I got to guess they'll buy Jason Kipnis out for $2.5 million instead of paying him $16.5 next year. Mike Moustakas has an $11 million mutual option with the Brewers or a $3 million buyout. He's another guy you got to think they would want to keep. But, you know, Milwaukee does weird things. You just kind of never know what's going to go on. You know, obviously the big position player, what's J.D. Martinez going to do? He's got 3 years at $62.5 million left on his deal, but he can opt out. You know, we've said it here before. You damn well know the Red Sox are dying for him to opt out. They want to get that salary off the books. That doesn't matter. Another National, Adam Eaton's got a $9.5 million club option or a $1.5 million buyout. So, you know, a couple decisions for the Nationals to have to make. We'll see how that goes. But yeah, this stuff will start popping up here as the days go on. And of course, we'll do our best to keep you updated on who's doing what and how it's going and all that stuff. But that's just some of the things that have happened and might still happen down the road. So there you go. I will get to do this all of Thanks for putting up with you on my phone. significant podcast. You can listen anytime you want.